We shall turn now to the Word of God, to the chapter read in the book of Job, Job chapter 33, where we have the continuation of the speaking of Elihu on behalf, he believes, on behalf of God to Job in the chapter 32. He now begins to speak. Job has declared at the end of chapter 31 that he has said everything he intends to say. And the conversation then between him and his three friends, who in reality are his three accusers, it has come to an end. And then Elihu, who has waited very patiently, has been taking a real interest in the conversations going on between Job and his three friends. He then introduces himself to not only speak to the three men, but now to particularly address Job. And you will see that there does appear to be a degree of regard for Elihu on the part of Job. Even though Elihu has said he is young and those whom he has been listening to are much older and much more experienced than himself, yet he says that he intends to speak to Job from the heart with the intention of doing him spiritually good. In the chapter 33, he begins now to address Job, and Job listens and doesn't interrupt. He doesn't even respond. This is why we say he appears to have high regard, or at least some regard, for Elihu. In verse 32, Elihu says, "If thou hast anything to say, answer me, speak, for I desire to justify thee. If not, hearken unto me, hold thy peace, and I shall teach thee wisdom." And he's inviting Job to engage with him, not in an argument, but seeking to come to an understanding of the truth, what God is actually doing by way of working with Job. In verse 4 of the chapter, Elihu says, "The Spirit of God hath made me, and the breath of the Almighty hath given me life. I'm a dependent creature just like yourself, Job. If thou canst answer me, set thy words in order before me. Stand up." He is a completely different approach to Job's situation and to what Job has said, a completely different approach to that of the three friends or professed comforters. And therefore we expect that Job's response will be different. We all know perfectly well that if we have a difference of opinion or understanding or interpretation to someone else, it all depends on how we approach the issue, what the response will be. And Job's response to his three friends was somewhat different to that of Elihu, because Elihu's approach to Job was entirely different. And we may consider how he seeks to deal with Job, how he seeks to advise him and in reality encourage him. First of all, we may consider what is obvious, Elihu's gracious approach to Job. A very gracious approach to Job. He has undoubted sympathy for Job. He was, we noticed last week, grieved because of what he had heard on the part of Job, but particularly on the part of his three friends. They had accused Job but hadn't produced the evidence that they were accusing him of doing or feeling to do. They had presented the accusations, they kept pressing them, and yet they never produced any evidence, and this is grieving to Elihu. On the other hand, he is of the opinion that Job has been too determined to produce evidence of his own righteousness before God, justifying himself rather than justifying God. Now in the chapter 33 then, he brings these things before Job. And you will see, we noted it in passing last week, verse 1, wherefore, Job, I pray thee, hear my speeches. And it is important to see the connection between this chapter and the previous chapter. Wherefore, Job, in the light of what I've said, now I desire you to listen. I pray thee, hear my speeches and hearken to my words. He may have felt, well, Job by this time must be exhausted and fed up listening to anyone. He is desiring to hear God speak. He's fed up listening to men, but he's asking Job, be patient and take into consideration. I'm not here to argue. I'm not here to debate Job. I'm not here to accuse or condemn Job. I'm here to reason with you in order that we might discover for our mutual benefit, but particularly yours, Job, what God is actually doing, because this is what Job so desperately wants to know. Verse 2, behold, now I have opened my mouth, my tongue hath spoken in my mouth. My words shall be of the uprightness of my heart. They are spoken honestly, they are spoken earnestly, they are from my heart, Job. It is my heart that goes out to you, Job. I have feeling, I have a heart for you. I'm not here to condemn you, I'm not here to ridicule you. I have a heart for you, Job, and that's why I speak in the manner in which I do. My lips shall utter knowledge clearly. And we noted last week how carefully he had listened, how carefully he had thought, how patiently he had waited before he would ever think of speaking. And now he is speaking. He says to Job, if thou canst answer me, set thy words in order. I'm quite prepared to listen, Job. I'm not here just to do the speaking. I'm here to listen. You will meet with people and they want to do all the talking. They refuse to listen. Their opinion is right. And they refuse to listen to anything that differs with them. But this is not the attitude of Elihu. Now, in passing, we ought to be asking, as we've gone through this book of Job, listening to all the multitude of words, the way they have been spoken, the spirit in which they've been spoken, the reason why they've been spoken, and the fruitless outcome of it all. We have to ask ourselves, what have I personally learned from all this? All scripture is given by inspiration of God, and is profitable for doctrine and for reproof and for instruction in righteousness. And when we see men or listen to them speaking, and while they're speaking, they are angering God. And that's what we have to understand. They were religious men. They feared God. They thought they were doing God a service. They were intending to stand up for God, as it were, against Job. And yet they were angering God by the way they were speaking and the manner in which they were speaking. And God requires that Job will make a sacrifice for them. People get it into their heads, oh, so long as I'm claiming to speak for God, all is well. Well, that's what these men were doing. But God disapproved of it. He disapproved of the spirit in which they spoke, the manner in which they spoke, the things they said that were not correct, that were misrepresenting him. And here Elihu has listened, taken note, and approaches Job then in a different attitude, with a different approach entirely. And if we be wise, we will be learning lessons, and we will be learning to be more careful how we speak and the manner in which we speak and the reasons why we speak, knowing that it is very easy to forget. We may be offending God while we're speaking. We may even claim to be speaking in His name and in His behalf, and yet misrepresent Him and offend Him. Now, how does Elihu begin? Very differently, he begins his speech toward a Job very differently to the others. In verse 6 he says, "Behold, I am according to thy wish in God's stead. I also am formed out of the clay. And just a man, Job. You've been pleading that you wished you had a mediator, someone that could stand between you and God. Well, Job, I have come to do just that." And he said, "Behold, my terror shall not make thee afraid, neither shall my hand be heavy upon thee." I don't intend, Job, to speak like the others. I don't intend to make you afraid. I don't intend you to be subdued by my heavy-handed speaking to you. I am come in meekness with a heart for you, Job. And in verse 8 he says, "Surely thou hast spoken in mine hearing, and I have heard the voice of thy words, saying, I am clean without transgression," and so on. Now notice, when he reminds Job of what he believes he has said during these conversations, then in verse 12 he says, "Behold, in this thou art not just." This is where you're mistaken, Job. "Behold, in this thou art not just. I will answer thee that God is greater than man." That's the very beginning. That's the very introduction to his conversation with Job. It's as though he's saying, "Job, the best place for us to begin is with God. We both must recognize, Job, that God is greater than man. We've got to start there. as you've heard me say before, it is always best to begin at the beginning. In the beginning was God. And that's where Elihu goes. Let's start with God, Job. Unless we have in our minds a right knowledge and understanding of who God is and what God is, Job will go nowhere. We'll make no progress. Now, if you look back and see the other three friends of Job, they began not with God at all, but with Job and what they perceived to be his sin. Let's deal with your sin, Job. Let's deal with your hypocrisy, Job. That was their approach. Let's discover, Job, why God is punishing you, the sin that you're hiding, Job, for which he's punishing you. But here's Elihu's approach. Let's discover who God actually is. If he's dealing with you, Job, what kind of a God is he who's dealing with you? We will be mistaken. We will falsely interpret his providential dealings with you, Job, unless we understand who he actually is. And you'll see in verse 24 what he says. Then he is gracious unto him. One that he appears to be dealing rather severely with. Elihu says he's dealing graciously. It may not appear in his experiences that there's a lot of graciousness in it, but Job, God is very gracious. And that's who's been dealing with you, Job, a gracious God. He's been manifesting his grace, Job, no matter how it appears on the surface of things. And you will see that he stresses right away how transcendent and omnipotent God is. God is greater. Greater than man. Greater than man's ability to comprehend him. Greater in his works. Greater in his wisdom. Greater in all his dealings with men. Greater beyond any ability they have to dogmatically declare this is what God's doing and this is why he's doing it. Now, Job's friends were very confident. Ah, we know, Job, what God's doing. We're able to tell you, Job, if only you will listen. But Elihu says, God is greater than man, therefore, Job, I don't think you should have spoken of God the way you did. You were overconfident, Job, because what is Job saying? Verse 9, I am clean without transgression. I am innocent, neither is there iniquity in me. Behold, he findeth occasions against me. He counteth me for his enemy. And Job had come to think this way. God is dealing with me like an enemy. And I expected him to be my friend, but he's dealing with me as though I'm his enemy. I've done something that I don't know of to provoke God to deal with me in this severe fashion. And then he says, verse 11, he putteth my feet in the stocks. He marketh all my paths. I cannot escape from God. He puts my feet in the stocks. He treats me like a criminal, and so on. Now, Elihu is saying, Job, you can't say things like that. Job, let's stop and think. God is not your enemy, Job. God is gracious, Job. You must remember, Job, that what God's doing is beyond our human comprehension. We just see a little. We just understand a little of what he's doing. Now it is interesting to see in the book of Job all the various parties that speak. God speaks. Satan speaks. Job's three friends speak. Job speaks. Job's wife speaks. Elihu speaks. And God finally speaks. God in the book of Job has the first word, and God in the book of Job has the final word. But in between, he allows all these various conversations so that man may exhaust his own intelligence and exhaust his own reasoning powers and be brought to have to sit back and acknowledge he doesn't know. He doesn't understand. God has the final word. Now, when Elihu approaches Job in this manner, he does it with a very profitable and caring motive. His concern is for Job. What does he say? Verse 31. Mark well, O Job, hearken unto me, hold thy peace, and I will speak. If thou hast anything to say, answer me. Clarify anything. I'm quite prepared to listen to what you have to say, Job. That's one of the great, great problems. Yes, even amongst the people of God. Very often very good at speaking, but very, very poor at listening. And that's why there's so often unnecessary controversy and bitterness and so on, because of the lack of the approach that Elihu had here. He says that he will speak. If thou hast anything to say, well, Job, I'm quite prepared to listen, speak, for I desire to justify thee. I don't want Job to condemn you. I don't want Job to make you miserable the way you say your three friends have been doing. Job, I want to justify you. I want you and I to come to that position where we are satisfied that we're acquiescing in the good will and purpose of God. He was not in the slightest trying to justify anything that he felt was erroneous in the speaking of Job, but the one thing that is clear is this. It comes out in what he says, even though he carefully listened. We noted all that last week, how slow he was to speak before he knew all the facts. Yet, he still misinterprets what Job said. However carefully he'd listened, he still misinterpreted what Job said. In verse 8, he says, surely thou hast spoken in mine hearing, and I have heard the voice of thy words. Now listen. What he says here is typically Hebrew thinking. I have heard the voice of words. Last week we noted the power of words. How powerfully words can do good or do harm. And what Elihu says is this, I have listened to the voice of thy words. You see what he's saying? Your words were a voice. As I said last week, the Hebrew mind thought in terms of words being alive. They were living words. They actually conveyed a message. They conveyed information. They were living words. Now, Elihu says, I have heard thy words, but in this way, he says, I've heard the voice. I heard the words speaking. And he was satisfied. He understood them, but he didn't. And this was the problem that Job's three friends had. They misinterpreted basically everything he said. But Elihu, he says here, I have heard the voice of thy words, and it's that voice I want to address. It's because of what I've heard, I now speak. But he hadn't understood fully what Job meant. And this is so often a problem. People hear the words. They say that's the voice. And they forget about the voice behind the words. And they form their own opinion as to what the words mean. And this happened, you see, in the case of Elihu. But what does he say? He has heard Job saying, I am clean without transgression, I am innocent. Now, he never heard Job say that, but he thought Job was saying that. Job was claiming his integrity, even God himself, back at the beginning of the book, said that. And Job was claiming that he was innocent of the accusations that his friends were making against him, but he did not claim to be sinless. He claimed to be blameless, and that's very different from a claim to be sinless. Job said, I'm not guilty of all the things you've been accusing me of, but I am blameless of them, but I'm not without sin. Now Elihu says, Job, I heard you saying, I am clean without transgression. I am innocent, neither is there iniquity in me. You see, he had put his own interpretation upon what Job was saying. And yet, though that is the case, he's able now to bring Job because of the right approach. Now you just imagine if he'd had the same approach as the previous three speakers. Job, if he'd reacted in the same fashion that he's previously done, he would have rebuked them, he would have sought to refute what they said, he would have reacted differently. But he doesn't. Even though Elihu is saying these things, Job is silent. He doesn't rebuke him. He doesn't react. Why? Because of Elihu's approach. The great danger again and again is the lack of a gracious approach. When we differ, when we think differently, when we believe differently, when we want to disagree, the attitude that we adopt goes a long, long way to maintaining peace. And this is the way it was with Elihu. Job could have said, well, hold on, Elihu, you're all wrong. But he didn't. Because he appreciated the charitable, gracious attitude that Elihu approached him with. Now, you will see the arguments that he uses. He does not believe what the other three believe. Remember what he says, verse 12, God is greater than man. Now let's begin there, Job. He says, let's now consider what God's been doing with you. Verse 13, why dost thou strive against him? For he giveth not account of any of his matters. God's under no obligation, Job, and you and I both know that. He's under no obligation to explain himself. He's under no obligation to explain the inexplicable to such as we are. You imagine if God were to begin to explain his providential dealings with you and I for one day, and he were to begin to explain to you and I all that is behind every incident, every action, every providence, and he were to link it up with every past providence, and he were to link it with every future providence, we would be absolutely baffled. We would be lost in amaze, because we are but a finite creatures with finite understanding and finite comprehension, which is even fallen, infected with sin. Now, here's what Elihu says, Job. Let's face it. God is under no obligation to explain to us what he's doing. He is greater than man. And therefore man needs to come down and take his place and recognize, I wouldn't even be able to fully comprehend the whole purpose of God. I must be satisfied and content then to acquiesce in his holy and good will without having to understand it all. I understand God is gracious, God is good, God is wise, God is doing the right thing for me. God, he says, speaketh once, yea twice, yet man perceiveth it not. Look, Job, God is gracious. And he manifests his graciousness by speaking. And he speaks to men in providence. He speaks once. And maybe they don't listen. So he speaks again. And maybe they still don't listen. So he speaks even louder. Men don't always listen, Job. And they don't always understand when God is speaking. So what does God do? He speaks perhaps in a dream, a vision of the night, deep sleep through the night, dreams and so on. And then here's the purpose of it, Job, verse 17. That he may withdraw man from his purpose. In order for God to fulfill his own wise purposes, he has to withdraw man from his purposes. And he speaks. And man doesn't listen. So he heads on his own way. So God speaks louder. And he still keeps moving in the wrong direction. So God speaks even more severely. What's it all about? He's telling Job this. God doesn't act, Job, just to punish sin. You don't have to conclude, Job, because you've been afflicted and because you've had these trials, that God is punishing your sin. Job, God afflicts men. He speaks to them, and he has to speak louder sometimes For what reason? That he may withdraw man from his purpose. God sees the danger. God sees where foolish man is taking himself. And have left to himself what he's going to do. So God steps in. And God speaks to withdraw man from his purpose and hide pride from him. To keep him humble. To bring him to recognize his own ignorance, his own folly, his lack of wisdom, his lack of foresight, his lack of knowledge. Why then do we find God sometimes barring the way to the fulfillment of our own purposes? Why does God speak and speak even louder to prevent us going in ways that we mightn't even imagine we would go on? It's to prevent his people from sinning that he sometimes speaks by way of affliction and by way of trials. Verse 18, he keepeth back his soul from the pit and his life from perishing by the sword. God is gracious and deals graciously, sending what is necessary to keep man from doing himself harm, to keep his people from going off in the wrong direction. And you think of it how many times, perhaps in your own experience. You think, why did God do this? Why has God sent that? What is God doing with me? What we sometimes need to sit back and think is this: what would I be like if I hadn't this trial? Where would I end up without this affliction? If God didn't send this particular trial, who knows what I might be thinking now? Who knows how prayerless I might be now? Who knows how much I might be taken up with the things of the world? But God keeps me low and keeps me humbly, crying to him, waiting upon him, hanging upon him. That's what Elihu was saying to Job. We can't conclude, Job, that God is punishing you for sin. It may be, Job, because he knows your heart, and because he knows the devil's tactics, and because he knows the potential in the human heart to go astray, he sends along that which will prevent you from sinning. How gracious God is in doing that. If you and I were to look back on our lives and in God's providential dealings with us, we would have to say, if he hadn't dealt the way he dealt, and it wasn't the way we wanted it, but it was the way he did it, what was it for? Where would we have gone if he hadn't kept us back? If he hadn't sent particular providences, where might we be today? God knows best. He sees the end from the beginning. And that's what Elihu is telling Job. Verse 19, he is chastened also with pain upon his bed, and the multitude of his bones with strong pain. And why does he do this? Verse 22, his soul draweth near unto the grave, and his life to the destroyers. God will speak so loudly because he will keep hold of his child. He will do everything necessary to prevent his child going astray, wandering off, becoming less spiritual and becoming more carnally minded. God will do everything necessary to improve his child spiritually. And then in verse 24, he is gracious unto him and saith, deliver him from going down to the pit, for I have found a ransom. Someone comes, verse 23, like Elias, he thought he was, to interpret the situation and maybe say to the afflicted, you know what God is doing. He's not punishing you. He's preventing you from going astray. He's keeping you humble. You remember whenever Paul speaks of his experience in 2 Corinthians 12, the thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet him. What did he say? And we might think, well, after all, God's dealings with Paul, the mighty apostle, and all that he'd gone through, it's very unlikely he'd ever become puffed up with pride. And yet what does Paul say? Lest I be exalted above measure. Lest I be exalted. And you might say, Paul, we never thought you would become too puffed up. We would never have expected to find any pride in you, Paul. Paul says the Lord saw it. Even when I couldn't see it, he knew it was there. And so he sent along the messenger of Satan to buffet me so that I wouldn't become exalted over much. And that's what basically Elihu's saying. Someone comes and says, Job, don't be downcast. Don't be discouraged. God is gracious. And in your prosperity, Job, God knew certain dangers. He knew that the devil could lead you astray, that your riches and your wealth could actually become an idol. Job, God knows what he's doing, and he's been keeping you where you need to be, close to himself. Then, verse 29, for the sake of time, lo, all these things worketh God oftentimes with man. What a statement. Lo, Job, all these things worketh God oftentimes with man. He does this very, very often. He does this often in the experience of his children. This is not something peculiar, Job. This is not something unique in your experience, Job. He does this again and again, preventing his children. And when they get to glory, and when they see how God has wrought graciously for them, they will see how many times he put a barrier in the way. How many times he slowed them down with affliction. How many times he sent sore trials because he knew without them, my child will wander. My child will become less spiritual. My child needs these providences for his good or her good. Lo, all these things worketh God. It's his work. It's not an accident. It's a work. It's a great work. God sends the rod. It's a work. He sends affliction. It's a work. It's a masterpiece of wisdom. A masterpiece of grace. Therefore, what Elihu is really pressing upon Job is this. Job, don't misunderstand God. His purpose in dealing with you, he's not your enemy, he's your friend. He has not done you any harm. He has prevented harm. He does you good. He is gracious. And God is greater than man. And he's greater in his wisdom, greater in his knowledge, greater in all his ways. Therefore, we have much to be thankful for. Every child of grace here this evening has reason to recognize that if God didn't do what he does on occasions, we would not be where we are tonight. We would be away far from God if left to ourselves. May he bless his word.